Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Okay, part two. Those of you who have been waiting, thank you for waiting. I needed to study. I needed to compile data. And I have good news. I have more justification for the claims I've been making as far as a month ago, which is that this virus, its death toll is being grossly exaggerated. And what we're seeing now on board are many other scientists throughout the world, people with very, very impressive credentials who do nothing but study infectious disease, jumping on the same bandwagon with myself. And we've got the statistics, you see. That's the thing. We're compiling the statistics now, and they're looking very good. So let me go on record and say right now, as I did a month ago, if this virus is costly, it'll be a bit more costly than the worst of our flus, which is nothing to turn your back at, which doesn't mean we're not supposed to take precaution. But it should mean that our reactions are toned down in such a way that we did not create what we already have begun to create, which is an economic calamity. And that is the risk here. The risk is that, as you well understand, that the repercussion of this economically can go on for a very long time. And we still have time. We do have time. We simply have to relax behind this, because when our quarantine is lifted, and that day will come soon enough, we have to get back to the economic picture. And if we do this with an optimism, if we do this with exuberance, we won't get too hurt. If not, and this is our risk. So with that, let's begin part two of the show. I have a lot to discuss. This is going to go on about an hour. And let's start with a little review here, Dr. Fauci. Now, Dr. Fauci, go to Article 1. You're on the website. Dr. Fauci, his credentials are not to be challenged. Perhaps his judgment, but perhaps we can't even say that. He's 79 years old. He's born December 24th, 1940. He's a physician and immunologist who has served as the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease since 1984. So this is the guy that goes back all the way to the AIDS crisis. His education is at the College of the Holy Cross. He went to Cornell Medical School. He went to Regis High School. High school I know well. That and Archbishop Molloy were the two brainiac Catholic schools. I went to Archbishop Molloy. So I know of him. He's got common sense. He's balanced. And he's done well with President Trump, who sometimes is not that easy to get along with. Look at the article, COVID-19. Now, he's putting his name on this. A guy like Anthony Fauci cannot afford to put his name on an article that's too left or right wing absurd. And yet, here I will read to you again. If one assumes that the number of asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic cases is several times as high as the number of reported cases, the case fatality rate may be considerably less than 1%. That's a very big deal. That is a very big deal. And I'm going to go on to say, because of what's coming out of England now through an Indian woman at Oxford named Gupta, contradicting the Ferguson model. What's coming out of England suggests something even better for us, which is that when, as Fauci's saying in this article, Article 1, if you were to bring in and include then the number of asymptomatic, your numbers would plummet, your lethality rate would plummet. I got to tell you, on my bottom dollar, if you added up the number of people right now in the United States that are infected, that we don't know about and that we're never going to know about, the lethality rates will plummet far below that of the flu. And I don't know if we're ever going to see that, but when you take a look at England, it's suggesting it. So I'll bring you that article in a moment. But for now, let's just consider Article 1. Fauci, now there he is. Okay. I'm not going to go through this with you now, but you have Richard Epstein. This might be a major catastrophe. Richard Epstein is a professor of law. He's in the YouTube clip you're looking at. He's a professor of law at NYU and at another university in Chicago. He's been around a long time. His forte is exactly this discussion, the relationship between pandemics and economies and statistics. This guy is a statistic guy. And he smells a rat with the Ferguson model. He smells a rat with the doomsday people. And he's explaining this in a wonderful, wonderful interview over 38 minutes. Look at that yourself. There's number two. I'm not going to get into him, but he's such a whip, this guy. Richard Epstein, a gift. This is generally where you get your truth. You get it from these fringe circles, but I'm not talking about the conspiratorial circles. I'm talking about people that just think outside the box, that don't have vested interest, that aren't bought. And you start seeing, as all issues, we saw this with 9-1-1, as things evolve, you start getting real thinkers, outside the box people, give you the truth. What I'm doing on this website, what I'm going to do continually with the coronavirus, is assemble these people for you so you can get a completely different worldview. All right, well, there's Epstein, and you can look at that one yourself later. Here's one that I want to get us to now. And that is the Gupta article. I say Gupta, she's an Indian woman, a scientist, and she's going to make some powerful statements about an idiotic model called the Ferguson model. So go to Article 3. And if you look at Article 3, excuse me, that is not Article 3. Look at Article 2. Go to Article 2. And there we go. Epidemiologist behind highly cited coronavirus model. This is the guy we trusted. Drastically downgrades projection. You really got to sit on this. This coronavirus has been in the world press. It's been in the American press. It's been all over CNN news. It's shut our economy down. No doubt there will be health ramifications from this, not to just mention pain and suffering. And this guy is running around saying the United States will see a couple of million people dead because of this plague, and England will see 500,000 dead. And the other day, this is March 26th, this article downgrades his projection to under 20,000. Who was he in the first place to do this? Who was he in the first place to be trusted? And who owns him, or is he brain dead? I am not an epidemiologist. Did you hear my show a month ago? I was asking everybody to relax when this guy was running around saying there'll be 2 million dead in the United States. Now look at what he's done. This is not Gupta. Gupta is a woman with a brain who challenged him way back. And yet, for whatever reason, the Ferguson model was the one that prevailed. Epidemiologist Neil Ferguson, who created the highly cited Imperial College London coronavirus model, which has been cited by organizations like the New York Times. Gee, why doesn't that surprise me? And has been instrumental in government policy decision-making, offered a massively downgraded projection of the potential death toll on Wednesday. That's it. That's the end of it. Pack yourself up, Ferguson, and go home. You're either stupid or you're bought. You're either stupid or bought. There's just no two ways to look at this. How do you feel locked up in your house right now? How many of you have lost income? How many of you see the markets or the professions you've given your life to disappearing before your eyes because of guys like Neil Ferguson? How can you be that wrong? How can you be that wrong when my show 3-4 weeks ago is saying, relax behind the coronavirus. It is grossly exaggerated. How? What has gone on here? And why has our media not done its investigative journalism? Why is CNN doing what CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS? Why is our collective media, save maybe Fox News, why have they blown this into the massive, absolute catastrophe that they've painted for us? Why? You can't walk away from this anymore. Look, I'm from your generation. It's the generation of, yeah, those politicians, those institutions, they're all corrupt. I got to get back to work now. Time out, guys. It's done. You get involved or you die. And that's what's on the board now. We have been had in a horrid way. This will affect you every day of your life now for the rest of your life. We have a decision to make as a community, as a world community. At least we should be getting the truth from our media. Okay, so Neil Ferguson's a jerk, and I will call him a jerk because he's either stupid or bought. Okay, now let's get down. Just scroll down on this page. Okay. Let's just scroll about halfway. Just keep scrolling slowly. And here we go. Ferguson's change of tune comes after Oxford epidemiologist Sunetra Gupta criticized the professor's model. Now, did you read that? Please read it with me. Find it. It's under New Scientist. I had trouble printing this one, so I couldn't scan it and then circle the relevant area. Pardon me for that. Ferguson's change of tune comes days after epidemiologist Sunetra Gupta criticized the professor's model. I am surprised. Now, Arendt, she's being professional. I'm, in a sense, being who I am, calling Ferguson an idiot. An idiot, or he's bought. She's soft pedaling. I am surprised that there has been such unqualified acceptance of the imperial model, Gupta said, according to the Financial Times. Professor Gupta led a team of researchers at Oxford in a modeling study, which suggests that the virus has been invisibly spreading for at least a month earlier than expecting, concluding that as many as half the people in the United Kingdom have already been infected. If she's even wrong by half, I have some wonderful news for you. And that is that the lethality of this thing is nothing. And its transmittability is a little bit more from what we know of the flu. Its RO is about 2 to 3. So it'll transmit faster than the flu, even though its interval phase is longer than the flu, which is on our side. But without getting into all that stuff, simply let me point out that you have an equally credentialed woman long before Ferguson was shooting his mouth off that and changing government policy, because for whatever reason, people listen to this guy. And she's saying, why? She's doing exactly what I'm doing. She's saying, why the heck is this guy's stats not calculating the number of people who get this that are not going to be symptomatic, that will not be calculated into the mortality rate. And this is so important. I will keep repeating this until you're out there with a sign picketing the quarantine. Now, and when I say picketing the quarantine, let me make this clear. Because the elderly are vulnerable, and because this is where the real threat is, a quarantine isn't such a bad idea. As Bannon says, even a harsher quarantine to flatten the curve immediately, like South Dakota did, wasn't a bad idea. The objection here is the crap, the gondola of shit that we've been hearing on CNN and all the media and jackasses like Ferguson predicting 2 million dead that scared the living shit out of everybody and crashed the market. It is our reaction, our inappropriate reaction based on the lies touted by the people we trusted that I have the problem with, not the quarantine. There's a huge distinction between the two. Thank you, Professor Gupta. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Now, half the people infected, half the people in the UK infected. The UK's got 66 million people. Right now, we have in the UK, I'm looking at Worldometer, right now in the UK, we have 1,000 total deaths. Let's say 1,200, since there's 260 today. No, 1,019 is what they're calling the total at UK. This is off Worldometer, which is a respected website. I've checked on multiple other websites that tabulate this stuff, and everything coming out of the coronavirus on Worldometer is consistent, you know, give or take a few percentage points. But that's the game with everybody. If we have half the UK infected, 30 million people, and we only have 1,019, if you take 1,019 and you divide that by 30 million infections, the number you come out with is 0.000033. And that means you're talking about a lethality rate of 0.033%. You're talking about 0.003%, not 0.1% like the flu. That's if what Gupta's saying is true. Half the people in the UK are already infected. Of course, this could change, right? We could see the death rates go up and up and up and up. Do you realize how high they're going to need to be to even put this thing there with the flu? We've got an article you're going to look at later on at why calculating the lethality rate is difficult. And it is, in a sense, it's difficult. In another sense, the common sense you can use, you can tell the difference between a plague and hype. And although you might not be able to get into real specifics, any way you cut this pizza pie, this thing at worst, and I mean at worst, is going to be, like Fauci says, a harsh seasonal flu. So it takes 100,000 people. Again, to be politically correct, if it takes two people, and it didn't need to take two people, that's not good. And we should respond. But our response should not be what's created a global economic catastrophe. Fauci saying it, Gupta saying it, Ferguson, jackass that he is, has had to withdraw statements. Richard Epstein is saying it. Ioannidis, chief of epidemiology at Stanford, is saying this. And let me ask you a question. You, my audience, how many people do you know that got this thing? Now, come on. At this point, you have to know enough people to make some sort of a judgment on this. How many people do you know that have it? And how many people do you know that have died of it? Yes, 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 it's early. You can't say. It's too early to tell. We just have to hide under a rock because it's coming. Don't worry, it's coming. And of course, you see how they're already setting us up? After it comes, it's going to come back. Only when it comes back, it's going to mutate. And when it mutates, it's going to get a lot worse. Add that to terrorism. Add that to global warming. Do you see what's being played out here? Of course, you have a solution. You've got your computer. You can work from home. Perhaps that's what we should all do. Work from home now. Don't go out anymore because it's dangerous. We have terrorism. We have plagues. We have crime. We have UV light because the ozone layer. Blah, blah. Do you see this? But let's forget all that, right? That's conspiratorial. And this is conspiratorial, too, because we really do have a plague out there. I can't count. Gupta can't count. Fauci can't count. Epstein can't count. Ioannidis can't count. Guys, it's time. It's time you get involved. Every one of you listening to this show today needs to assume the responsibility of getting in the face pleasantly, but with statistics of 100 people. Turn them on to my show. We're starting to draw a line. We are starting to draw a line in the sand between people who have their heads on straight and people who have their heads up their asses. People who live in such abject fear that all they can do is sit in front of CNN News and listen to these slime bags, these bought slimes, tout idiocy. Okay. That's Gupta talking about half the people, 60 million, 30 million. Let's go to 15 million. Let's say 15 million are now infected. So we've got the number of deaths divided by 15 million. The number of deaths, I'll even say 1,200 to make it friendly. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now, I'm going to argue against myself. Gupta says half the population, that's 30 million. I'm going to say 15 million. I'm going to take 1,200 and divide it by 15 million. Do the math yourself. That gives us a 0.008%. 0.008%. That comes to 0.01%. That means it's one-tenth as dangerous as the flu. One-tenth. What this is going to end up being is probably a more transmissible relative to the flu, but far less virulent virus. That's probably what we're going to look at. And what we're seeing across the world are populations of individuals who are tailor-made for a big hit early on. And after that, I mean, look, Italy's got right now 10,000 dead. If Italy gets to 60,000 dead, that's 60,000. If Italy gets to 100,000 dead, if before it blows through Italy, a country of 60 million people, we get to 100,000 dead. Right now we have 10,000 dead. Do you really think, with the world and its eyes on Italy, that 10,000 is going to get up to 100,000? Italy lost 60,000 a few years ago in the flu. They lost 60,000. Sooner or later, this thing flattens out. What this thing may really be, what it may really be is a boxer, a fighter, with a very, very, very weak punch that we haven't seen before. And it's just going to knock out that segment of the population if they're situated just the way the virus needs it to be, who are by far ready to die anyway. Sorry. This could be an old age home virus. And again, to be politically correct, that doesn't mitigate our responsibilities. So I support a quarantine, but really, again, I don't need to repeat myself, do I? Interesting when you think outside the box. Interesting to find the scientists that do. Now let's continue with the site. I want to get to another one. I'm going to put you through this. Why? Because you need to see the number of people that are essentially saying what I'm saying, who are perhaps in a better place to say the things that I'm saying, a more respected place even. All right, where do we go next? Where do I take you next? I'm going to get to what to do about it. There's some things about this virus that are so compelling and on your side. You have no idea. Wait. All right, so there's Article 1, Fauci. There's Article 2. There's Gupta. Then Article 3. Here's Ioannidis. Just take a look at Article 3. I'm just scrolling to it myself. All right. Here he is. Stanford University Professor Giant Ioannidis, Professor of Medicine, of Epidemiology, Population Health, and Biomedical Data Science, and of Statistics at Stanford University, Co-Director of Stanford's Med Research Innovation Center. Blah, blah, blah. All right? Not a guy to dispute. And what is he saying? If you scroll down, Ioannidis is saying something very simple. He's saying, based on the luxury cruiser, we can extrapolate a trustworthy model. If you scroll down, and again, I apologize, I didn't scan and print with some of these. It's very difficult. The professor says that one situation of a closed society provided limited but useful information was from the Diamond Princess cruise ship. There were just 7 deaths among the 700 infected passengers. The real death rate could stretch from 5 times lower, 0.025%. You know, again, that's not 0.003% that I was just touting, which is more like Gupta. But what you're seeing now, that's got a lot more common sense behind it, is that people across the board, Epstein, Ioannidis, Gupta, are bringing the lethality rates way down. 0.025 to 0.625. 0.625, let's say this, a fatality rate of 0.05% is lower than the seasonal flu. This is what he's saying. I said 0.003% off Gupta's model. Ioannidis is just throwing this out based on his gut. And there's a certain point where you got to look at the stats and use your clinical sense. Use your experience, use your gut. And again, he's coming out 0.05%. Locking down the world, which may be totally irrational. It's like an elephant being affected by a house cat. Frustrated and trying to avoid the cat, the elephant accidentally jumps off the cliff and dies. That's an epidemiologist that heads Stanford. That's not a small thing. That's Fauci calling this a harsh seasonal flu. So let's take it at the worst. Let's take Fauci. This flu takes 80,000 in the United States. Takes 80,000 in Italy. That makes it 15-20% more dangerous than the flu of 2017-2018. And for that, we're hiding under a rock and crashing our economy. Had we had on our head on straight, perhaps we would have been in a harsh quarantine for 3 weeks to flatten the curb. Had the president been counseled correctly, perhaps the nation would have agreed that following the South Korean model, what we could have done is gone on vacation for 3 to 4 weeks, made sure the government subsidies were there, made sure the feds took the interest rates down to approximately zero, and just waited this out, flattened the curve, got back to work, and developed a contingency for the old, who, by the way, are the only ones that are really going to get this. And don't argue with me with these anomalies. Statistically, after the age of 70, you have to think about this. After the age of 80, you really have to think about this if you get it. And all the people, by the way, in Bergamo that are dying, almost all of them, are over 80 with comorbidities. That's the cost of panic. That's the cost of the idiocy of CNN. That's the cost of jackasses like Ferguson predicting the next plague. This is too costly to put up with anymore. And here's the bad news. I've given you nothing but good news. Here's the bad news. The bad news, and quote me, this is just rehearsal. We will deal with another one of these, and it will come within a decade or so, and it will have real bite. And that's really the way you have to think. And therefore, we've changed forever. We have already changed forever, which is why I have my website, which is why I'm about, in a few moments, to get into what you can do to make sure you don't get sick. You really have to understand the virus. You have to understand the immune system, the interplay between the innate and the adaptive. And then there's some interesting twists on this virus that I find so absolutely fascinating that explains the issue. And once again, the children are giving us the clue. All right, let's get out of this article. Let's get back to the site. All right, Dr. Fauci's article, we did Article 2, Article 3, Article 4 is for a moment from now, Article 5 is from a moment, Article 6 is from a moment, supplement to Article 5, Article 6 we've done, Article 7 we've looked at, that's Gupta. There's two Guptas in here, one claiming half of England's infected, then Gupta's already down on Article 7, and of course, this is Worldometer. Get to know Worldometer. I like the way they put their data together. I think they do a credible job. Of course, I don't trust anything, and so I've crossed them with a bunch of other websites, and they come up pretty clean. I don't see them exaggerating. Supposedly, they're out of China, which, of course, makes me leery. But nonetheless, I think they're to be trusted. All the John Hopkins websites, the other ones, correlate very similarly. You know, if you want a website, you better do it right if you're counting, because the minute you feel caught lying, your website's done. Okay, let's get in to me what's way more interesting. I just won't want you crawling under a rock. And by the way, if you're listening to this, Sunday, April 5th, I am doing a webinar. You call my phone, my office line. My staff will take care of payment. It's $100. It's Sunday, August 5th. That's this coming Sunday, a week from today. It's from 12 o'clock till 6 o'clock. You'll have lots of time to go to your house of worship. It is Palm Sunday, and then you get on and you listen to me teach the immune system. Because what's going to come out of this on the other side, what will come out of this is how to bolster your immunity to make sure you never become a statistic. Once again, to put more focus on a real health practice. We all got to get more real here. And from the exaggeration of this garbage on the media, the other industry that exaggerates is the herbal industry. And you know this is one of my peeves. Because you really think you're going to down all these wonderful antivirals, from olive leaf to cat's claw. And collectively, because a couple of studies support it, because some sort of a in vitro study states that allicin, meaning the sulfa component of garlic, of concentrated bear garlic, could kill the coronavirus, that downing a lot of that's going to make a huge difference and you're okay. And again, this is the fantasy we live in. And when it really rains and then when it pours, people suffer. They suffer terribly because they've been delusional. You can be delusional in natural health. You can be delusional trusting CNN and crawling under a rock. Delusions everywhere. But health? Health is not a delusion. There's so much that can be done to ensure you at any age that you don't have to succumb to something like this. So let's take a look at real health. First of all, let's do this. Let's go to Article 5. Article 5, coronavirus and the immune system. This has come out fairly recently. Got an abstract. Got an intro. Scroll down to figure one. You can see what the coronavirus looks like. There's its genome in there. That orange blue thing. This is a double-stranded RNA virus. Genome RNA. That means instead of thymine, you're going to have uracil in the sequence, meaning you don't have any nucleotide called thymine. Instead of thymine, there'll be uracil, difference between RNA and DNA. This is a double-stranded RNA virus. It's the longest one known. It's 30,000 nucleotides. It's 3 kilobases. Excuse me, 30 kilobases. And it's got many different strains. These viruses are always mutating, which of course is in our favor most of the time, but maybe the end of us if this strain were to mutate. But you understand now, there's every virus in the world in your body right now could mutate tomorrow. This isn't about the coronavirus. This is about understanding infectious disease. And it's about understanding that in any given moment, the body is one mass of microbial soup. And it's evolved wonderful countermechanisms. The body knows how to counterbalance disease. If you look at smallpox, if you look at the bubonic plague, if you look at the Spanish flu, most people beat it. We really haven't had one that's wiped out most of the human race. We've had a number that have taken a chunk that were truly demonic, but nonetheless, which left the vast majority of populations intact and unscathed. So don't think Homo sapien, mammalian, hasn't evolved some very, very powerful countermeasures. But what does that have to do with rotting away in a chair in the dark on an electromagnetic microwave machine called a cell phone or a computer? You see, modern techno man is divorcing himself from the countermeasures we've evolved for a long, long, long time. And that's the way we ought to be looking at this. Let's keep scrolling. All right. Now, eventually, I want you to scroll down to the big picture. Figure two, the one with all the colors. The one that I put my own numbers on. And I think, so you don't get a full migraine, this is kind of what we're going to focus on. this page right here. And the reason for that is this will be a 7-hour show otherwise, and you'll be falling asleep. But with the right perspective, there's some really interesting stuff about this virus. So let's take a look at figure two. Okay. First of all, you got to understand something. Go to on that figure, that colored picture that's got the legend underneath it that's discussing figure two. Let's talk about figure two. The innate immune response and adaptive responses of the coronavirus infection during an infection. So we're all on the same page. Now I want you to just go to the lower left-hand side. Look at that big green thing called a macrophage. Take your time. Get yourself on this so you can see it. Blow the picture up. See where I put number one and the red asterisk there? All right. That's a macrophage. And what the macrophage has done is it's bonded to the coronavirus. Now, once the macrophage binds to the coronavirus, well, let's read it. The innate immune response and the adaptive immune response. And we'll get into the distinctions between the two in a moment. Super important that you start to respect these because it takes you to a very happy ending. During an infection, COVID infects macrophages. So that's what you're looking at where I put number one. It's the virus infecting a macrophage. A macrophage is like a Navy SEAL that's on the loose, a renegade Navy SEAL. And anything it doesn't like, it whacks. It's powerful. It takes on all comers, and generally it succeeds. A macrophage, as well as the dendritic cells, are part of what we call the innate immune system, as opposed to the other immune system called the adaptive immune system. When you hear the word antibody, when you hear the word B lymphocyte, you're in the neighborhood of the adaptive immune system. The adaptive immune system gets triggered by the innate immune system. And we'll get into that. But the adaptive immune system, you have to think of like an assassin. An assassin is not a rogue maniac. An assassin, or an antibody, or a product of the adaptive immune system, is looking for a specific target. We talk about the antibody to the coronavirus. Antibodies are specific. The adaptive immune system is a specific immune system. And we call it adaptive because those antibodies evolve off an acquired immunity. In other words, we become skillful at looking at the target, in this case the coronavirus, studying it and figuring out how to create a specialized assassin for it called an antibody. And of course, that's the job of the B lymphocyte. All right, now, let's continue reading. I'm going to get you guys through this figure two. You'll learn a lot. Just bear with me. I think I've made it relatively simple. The coronavirus infects macrophages. Now, listen to how that's stated. The coronavirus infects macrophages. Yeah, the virus. Well, let's just say it makes contact with the macrophage. And then the macrophage presents the coronavirus to T cells. Now, what does that mean? It means the macrophage beats the balls off the virus. It beats the living hell out of it. It eats it up. It kills it, takes its guts, and throws its guts on the membrane of the macrophage. That signal on the membrane of the macrophage is called an antigen. That antigen is going to stimulate a response eventually that's going to already translate to the adaptive immune system, but right now the macrophage is handling the virus. And as this legend says, presents it to the T cells. This process leads to T cell activation and differentiating, including the production of cytokines associated with the different T cell subsets, followed by a massive release of cytokines for immune response amplification. Wow. So let's go to number one. And look how once the virus binds to the macrophage then puts its signal on its own membrane. And that, if you go all the way above number one to number two, that starts to cause activation of your T helper cells. And your T helper cells start to activate your T cells. And then your T cells down the line actually start to produce, if you look at Th17, so let's follow that again. Go to number one, look above number one to number two, and then across to number three, and then just follow that T cell, that green, all the way down to the bottom there. Interleukin 1, interleukin 6, interleukin 8, interleukin 21, tissue or tumor necrosis factor or tissue necrosis factor beta, and MCP1. They are our cytokines. Now, the cytokine begins a cascade that's deadly to the virus. It's the end of it. Virus is done. These are your interleukins. These are your interferons. Takes the virus apart and kills it. That's how innate immunity works. It works from the macrophage to the T cell to the interferons. And the interferons whack the virus. Done. Problem. Here's the problem. A cytokine is an inflammatory mediator. It creates inflammation. Inflammation's part of a healthy response. Inflammation is part of what allows a massive number of immune system cells to come charging in to kill infection. But there's a downside to it. And the downside to it, inflammation then becomes the real disease. People die of coronavirus from the inflammatory response, not the virus. Because the inflammatory response brings in cells that create fibrin. And fibrin is deposed into the tissues. Fibrin scar tissue. It scars up your lungs. And you suffocate to death. That's why everyone needs the ventilators. So let's back up here. Along comes the coronavirus. Gets into the body. Enters through the oropharynx down the lung. It also goes to the stomach. But what do you think kills it in the stomach and makes it far less lethal to the gastrointestinal tract, right? This isn't cholera, which causes you to defecate to death. Comes in the same way. You breathe it in. You breathe in water particles. You breathe in micro droplets. Most of those droplets drop to the floor and you don't breathe them in. But when people sneeze, the virus is suspended in that mucus droplet. It's got to be a micro droplet unless people are spitting in your face. I mean, how many of you, since this has started, have had people's like micro snots all over your face because you've been out in public? It just doesn't happen. But that's what it needs to be transmitted. It's one of the major ways it gets transmitted. At any rate, however it gets in, whether you rub your eyes or whether you touch your face and then pick your nose, however and whatever way, once it gets into the lung, the alveolar macrophages are going to attack it. And this whole process I just delineated, it's one of a number of processes, but this is one of the big ones. And again, I don't want to overload you with a 7-hour seminar. Let's do that, okay, in a very fluid way. And I mean very fluid. Do this seminar. If you're listening, call me at 714-850-1007. Do the seminar. I'm going to have this rigged like tomorrow. And you're all going to have PowerPoints sent to you via email. I mean, I am really going to do a shindig here. I was going to start my webinar. I'm starting an online school. I had planned to do this long before the coronavirus. It's just there are so many things to do. And it was 200 a person. I've dropped this to 100 a person. Certainly, I understand on many levels what's going on economically for many, many, many people. Not everybody. Some of you are already cave dwellers that live and work on a computer. But for many, many people, for far too many people, this economic thing is bad. It's very bad. And if we don't start getting checks, it'll get much, much worse for many people. All right. Now, inflammation. Now you have a problem. You have cytokine storm. All the interferon that your T cells are producing, and you can't handle the inflammatory response. You're scarring out in the lung. You've got to stop the inflammatory response. So if you rush to ER, you get a ventilator and a steroid. And that's kind of how it works. You need a ventilator because you can't breathe, and you need a steroid to get rid of the inflammation. Now, this is why you come to my site. Watch what I do with that. Watch what I do with that. Let's back up. We're going to go out of this article now. And you're going to see Article 4. I mean, this is what I love. This is why I study. You know, I've come to my second half a little bit later in the last couple of weeks because it's time for me to hit the books and study and put the pieces together. Look at this, Article 4. Vagus nerve stimulation crushes cytokine syndrome. I mean, this is gold. It's gold. Vagus nerve stimulation attenuates the systemic inflammatory response to endotoxin. You get the implications of that? What do you think shuts down cytokine storm? The main reason people die of this is cytokine storm. The inflammatory response overpowers the organ. The kidneys go, the heart goes, and the lungs go. It's not just the lung. Lots of people die of this from renal failure. So if you have renal disease, if you have heart disease, you go into congestive heart failure, that's it. Your organs go up in an inflammatory storm. Let me ask you a question. What's the first thing you depend on to quell inflammation? Cortisol. Where are your adrenals? The hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. Not just adrenaline, but also cortisol. Cortisol. Remember cortisol? The body's anti-inflammatory, the body's immunosuppressant. You got to be able to produce lots. Not if you're in adrenal exhaustion. Not if you're weak. Not if you don't get sun. Not if you don't exercise. Not if you're diabetic. Not if you're just plain exhausted. And most of all, not if you are sympathetic dominant. Yeah, yeah. Sympathetic dominant. What do I mean, sympathetic dominant? I mean you're so stressed. you haven't had a good sleep, and basically you're living in stress shock, which is really what a lot of sick people do. So collectively, are you balanced in the autonomics? Because you need, and I'm telling you through lots of blood, sweat, and tears, that when you watch people heal in acute, stressful situations, they either reach down inside and relax themselves, or they die. And I'm telling you this from being there with patients over the years in all sorts of terrible situations, life-threatening situations. You have to know how to get behind yourself and relax your body. And if you're having the kind of care that does provide recovery, you have to have the kind of care that puts the patient in that zone. Of course, this was always the mark of the great doctor, right? The doctor would show up like the priest, and his ministry would bless you. The doctor came to fight the disease for you. The doctor came as an ally, as a friend, as someone who sacrificed his own health, as someone who sacrificed his own economic status. At least in the ideal of it, that was quintessentially the stereotype. That is the history of medicine, the Hippocratic Oath. The doctor goes to the front line, and the doctor relaxes the patient. Now, we can take that and we can do an entire week on vagal nerve stimulation. But if I had a patient with coronavirus, that patient would be getting all the therapies that attenuate the nervous system. I didn't say attenuate the virus. I said attenuate the nervous system. Bring him in, get him on the ventilator, put them into a steroid, and then bombard them with all the things that create repose. Now, who are you on the onset of the infection? What's your capabilities? Were you the kind of person that knew how to relax yourself? But I'm not talking about, did you take a walk in the park once a week? Do you have a glass of wine of knife at night and hold hands with your wife? If you've listened to this show, you know the context in which I mean. Were you connected to that repertoire of skills, that skill set within that puts you in the endorphin state? Do you live with the endorphin? Because if you're good at this, you see, even in the worst scenario, your body's going to deliver the counterpunch. And that counterpunch to what will otherwise be death through fibrosis of the lung or the kidney, that counterpunch will be in the form of two things. Massive cortisol release, because you've got the reserve, because you've built it up, and your ability to kick the parasympathetic impulse, to turn the switch on, to turn it on in the true sense of it, as measured via endorphin release. And this is what you have to get. This is what you have to get. The macrophage to the T cell, making the interleukins, making the interferons, killing the viruses, and then you cut back and counterbalance the downside to the inflammatory response. That's why people that get through this get through it. All right, I feel you now. You're hanging in there. You're understanding and you're feeling more confident. Vagus nerve stimulation crushes cytokine syndrome, you see? All right, let's go back to Article 5 and we'll continue reading now. Not done with the response. We only read under Figure 2. So now you went into Article 5, you opened it up again, and we went back to, unless you've got multiple windows open, you figure out how to manipulate your website. So I'm going to go here, three sentences down, followed by a massive release of cytokines from immune response. The continued production of these mediators due to viral persistence has a negative effect on the CD8 T cells and the NK cells. Now, that's not so good. So we want to have a regulated inflammatory response. Regulated. You don't think there's something called the vagus nerve that starts to say, hey, you know what? All you interferon-producing interleukins are having a negative effect on the NK cells and CDT8 activation, the T helper cell activation. I don't like that, so I'm going to start squirting some vagal nerve juice down the pipe into the area to shut down the interleukins, to shut down the cytokines, so we can kick in the NK cells to go eat the viruses whole. You don't think that's happening? That's exactly what it means to stimulate the vagus nerve. If you've got a vagus nerve that works. However, CD8 T cells, that's a T helper cell, produce very effective mediators to clear coronavirus. Yes, they do. That's why you want them. And it's basically saying that the T cells have these receptors. Here, let me just read that because it's getting choppy here. However, CD8 T cells produce very effective mediators to clear coronavirus. And then under B, this is letter B, attachment of coronavirus to DPP4R on host cell through S protein leads to the appearance of genetic RNA in the cytoplasm. Pardon that, it's very unclear, but I just want to bring you now to the picture of what this poorly worded sentence tried to describe. I want you to go to where I put number four. Go to number four on the left-hand side of the picture at the bottom where it says DPP4R receptors where the coronavirus attaches. Again, keep in mind now this blue thing. It's blue, yellow, blue. It looks like a line of embroidery. That's a cell membrane. And on the right side, you're inside a cell. What cell? Let's just say an alveolar cell. And on the outside, well, that's the intercellular space. So let's just pretend this is the lung, okay? It's an alveolar cell. That's a specialized cell in the lung that's equipped to make sure you get oxygen in and you take carbon dioxide out. It's an alveolar cell. And let's just say it's got a membrane, which it does, and on the right, that's inside the cell, and on the left, that's outside the cell. And you're at the bottom of this picture where it says number four. I put a number four in my own handwriting, where we're just taking this, okay, the signal. We're taking this receptor built into the membrane of the alveolar cell. It's called a DPP4R receptor, and that's where the virus attaches. Because that virus, if it ain't dead, it wants to get into the cell. Take over the genetic machinery like a virus does and produce more of itself. And of course, this bursts the cell or makes the cell useless. And guess what? In bats, this is fascinating. In bats, when this happens, the immune response is so limited that the bat lives with the virus. Yeah, we think this comes from bats into those, what is it, pangolins? We think that the bat virus hit the pangolin virus in the wet markets of China. Wet markets, if you don't know, are the markets where we bring all sorts of exotic animals, and unfortunately, it's not hygienic enough to to prevent the mixing of bloods from different animals. And in this microbial soup of exotic animals, bats being ingeniously equipped with an immune system to handle viruses, somehow out of this came the coronavirus. And what we're pointing out here now is that there are these receptor sites on the cells, say in the alveolus, where the coronavirus binds. So what you're looking at there on four is that it looks like a diamond. It says CoV, that's COVID-19, binding to the DPP4R receptor in the cell membrane of, we'll suppose, an alveolar cell. That's what this nonsense was trying to say that it didn't do a great job of saying. But let's go back and take a look at it. However, CD8 T cells produce very effective mediators to clear COVB. That we've already stated, that has nothing to do with anything. But attachment of COV to DPP4R on the host cell through S protein. There is an S protein they're not citing there, but leads to the appearance of genomic RNA in the cytoplasm. So it's just saying, this is how this little virus gets in through this receptor in the cell membrane. Now, let's keep reading. An immune response to the double-stranded, DS is for double-stranded, an immune response to double-stranded RNA can be partially generated through CoV replication. So what are they saying? They're saying that once it gets inside, the virus begins to try to replicate, and it does this by making enzymes to make an RNA polymerase, which is an enzyme that supports the duplication of the sense strand of the RNA. And don't get hung up in that, but the virus, once it gets in, knows how to multiply itself. We'll just say that. And that's what the sentence said, that this virus, double-stranded RNA, is going to try to replicate, but our immune system knows how to do something about it. And now it's explaining what. How does our immune system, once the virus is in the cell, remember what we were talking about outside the cell, right? What we were talking about in the innate immunity outside the cell, one example was the macrophage doing it, patrolling its beat. It's kind of like a rogue Navy SEAL. It's going to kill anything in sight, sees the virus, starts, makes the interferons, and bada boom, that's the end of the virus. But the fibrosis that ensues from the inflammatory response, well, that's the vagus nerve, and let's shut it off. And I just discussed that. Remember, if you're getting a headache, that in fact, this is a recording. It's a podcast. It's the second half. You can listen to this again. And again, I think I'm making this pretty clear. In fact, I know I'm making it pretty clear. I didn't pull this podcast out of my hat. Now, TLR3. Here, now we're going to get to the immune response by our cells on the inside of the cell. TLR3, that's toll receptor 3. I don't want to get into that, but TLR3, sensitized by the double-stranded RNA and cascades of signaling pathways that they're talking about, the IRFs, are activated to produce interferons and pro-inflammatory cytokines. So now we're getting another response once the virus, and I'm going to have you come all the way up to number 6. Just relax, you'll get it, I promise you. It's not number 6, once you go to number 5. I want you to go to number 5. Because it's a picture of what this last sentence is trying to explain. TLR3, that's a toll receptor, we call it. See there under number 5? So just on the right side of the lower picture, 5 and my, you know, what is that? A magenta asterisk. See TLR3? TLR3 is a toll receptor. And TRL3, let me simply say, in conjunction with that thing that looks like a wrench, that endosome, the endosome is something within the cell that surrounds the virus. It should surround the virus. It's kind of sequestered the virus. And that wrench in there is the S protein. And that little tiny caterpillar in the center there is the virus. And this receptor, this TLR3, binds to the S protein, and that creates a cytokine release that wastes, because it'll produce interferon, it wastes the virus. So TLR3, sensitized by the double-stranded RNA. Sensitized means the double-stranded RNA activates the TLR3. It's the word in immunology for activating something. TLR3 sensitized by the double-stranded RNA, meaning the virus, and cascades of signaling pathways that we don't need to get into, are activated to produce type 1 interferons and pro-inflammatory cytokines. That's what you're looking at 5. The production of type 1 interferons is important to enhance the release of antiviral proteins for the protection of uninfected cells. So this cell may be dying. In fact, it is. But as it dies, because the type 1 interferon in this dying cell, this type 1 interferon produces these proteins, which do what? Protect uninfected cells. So I would conjecture now, so the virus doesn't get inside, or the virus can't hurt the uninfected cells because of these proteins that are produced off the cytokine release, off the interferon, off the initial virus sensitizing the TLR3. Lot of stuff, guys. But you'll see what we can do with this. Now, let's go to TLR4. That's another mediator in the fight. We'll just call it that, okay? It's another mediator in the fight. They're actually called pathogen recognition receptors, PRRs. TLR, NLR, RLR are all pathogen recognition receptors. It simply means this. The body, in its high wisdom, produces these compounds, these chemical moieties that run around. And when they see something in the enemy that they can recognize and thus know it's the enemy, they begin the immune response. That all it means. And they all look different. So a TLR, TLR3, TLR4, may look at the protein structure of the virus. RLR, or a different type of pathogen recognition receptor, may respond to the carbohydrate structure of a virus. In a sense, all we're saying here in this TLR3, TLR4, PRR, pathogen recognition receptors, all we're saying is that our body has evolved a lot of different types of police that notice different clues to invasion. Something specialized in knowing the hat. Something else looks for the wrong suit or the wrong tie or the wrong shoe. And that's all this is about right now. But it's important to break this stuff down. It's important for you to get a sense of what we mean by what? Interferon. What does interferon do? Kills the virus. What's the problem with that? It produces this inflammatory response, because interferons produced by cytokines. Cytokines, interleukins, produce side effects. Those side effects are why you die. Thus, you need the vagus nerve. Thus, you need the steroid. Thus, you need the ventilator. Wait till I get to what you really need, because that's the really good news. All right, hang in there. Obviously, you're going to do this show in parts, but you need to hear the whole show. You need to come to my webinar. I'm opening up a whole different wing of the media. I'm spending money I don't have to do this, but it's time. I'm going to make the conversion, since we'll all be living in caves. Not me. Not me. Listen, people beat the bubonic plague. By the way, what about die fighting? You know, what about that? What about not crawling under a rock? I'm going to die crawling under a rock, listening to Anderson Cooper and Don Lemon? That's what I'm going to do? Stick a knife in each one of my eyeballs, please, before I go down like that. Okay? In plain English. I went in the water yesterday. I went in the water today. I'll go in the water tomorrow. Go stop me. I'll be up in a cave in Canada somewhere before I put up with this bullshit. And so should you, because if enough of you meet it the way I'm asking you to meet it, because you have education, it's going to change. The fake news exists because we don't tell people who listen to fake news that they shouldn't listen to lies, because we don't have the truth memorized. And that's what's got to change now. So it's got to change. All right, let's continue. I'm going to make you continue. Sometimes accessory proteins, now see, this is the good stuff, man. Sometimes accessory proteins of CoV can interfere with TLR3 signaling and bind the double-stranded RNA of CoV during replication to prevent TLR3 activation and evade the immune response. You see? Look at that. And you can see why drugs are so fascinating. If you can take that and create some kind of drug to stop that, wow. If that even reduces symptomology and saves a few lives, that's billions of dollars. This is the genius of pharmacology, except not at the expense of the other things you're learning from me. See, there's no problem. Pharmacology is wonderful stuff. But it exists at the exclusion of nature. And this is the problem. Vagal nerve stimulation. We're going to get into a lot of this later. But having the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, your cortisol response, ready to flood your lung, is critical. And that's why you see the vast majority of people get through this. They have a cough. They don't go into cytokine storm. Old people are burned out and they're sick. They don't have adrenal function. How much you want to bet? How much you want to bet? And I say this to you Italian socialists. And as an American, think twice about your shit form of government. Socialism sucks. Communism sucks. The Italian people I love. The Chinese people I love. Your governments suck. But let's just stick to Italy. You don't think we could have taken Bergamo? And in 2 years, 2 years of mandates, 2 years of heavy emphasis, taking all those people and attach them to a lifestyle that would have protected them from this? You don't think that's not true? Why isn't CNN news coming from that standpoint? Why isn't the Italian government? You know how many of those people smoked? Have you ever gone to Bergamo? Bergamo is an old, beautiful city that offers all the wonderful sophistication of Italian culture. But those apartments are old. They are smog-ridden. People smoke. The plumbing stinks. The healthcare system stinks. It's dead socialism. Italy is a grossly depressed first and second-hand experience. Southern Italy. No one's in Southern Italy anymore. Everyone there is old. Where are the young people? They're not there. They don't want to be there. They come here. They go to other parts of Europe. Italy was a sitting duck, and we knew this because we've studied Italy over the decades for the flu. If there's one place in Europe that's going to get destroyed by a harsh seasonal flu, it's Italy. It's northern Italy, and it's for all these reasons. And so now we're sitting there going, how could this happen? What a tragedy. Where was the forethought? Okay. Now. Reading. Keep reading. Get to the end. It's only a few more lines, and then I'll speed up the conversation and relax your brain. Sometimes CoV produces accessory proteins. It interferes with the T. You're looking at number 5, but I'm reading in the legend what's referring to where I put number 5. And that is, sometimes the proteins of CoV interfere with TLR3 signaling and the double-stranded RNA of CoV during to prevent this TLR3 activation and evade the immune response. Now, TLR4 might recognize the S protein and lead to activation of the pro-inflammatory cytokines through MYD88-dependent signaling pathway. Where did you see that? That's where number 4 is. So we've got these pathogen receptors, these pathogen recognition receptors, TLR3, TLR4, and they will recognize and bind to the virus, and that will stimulate the production of cytokines, thus interferon. That occurs in the intercellular space. That occurs in the cell membrane, and that occurs inside the cell. So the body in the part of immunity we call the innate immunity uses interferon to bombard. And of course, the cytokine has a downside, which the vagus nerve comes in and sticks. I think this is very worthwhile for you to go through. Don't you? Don't be sitting there and saying, I'm older and I'm elderly and I have a headache. You have a brain. You've made it this far in your life. You have more than enough intelligence, if this is correctly explained to you, to appreciate the orchestration here. And I'm going to tie this all together, my friends, because you have to admit this is empowering. Virus cell interactions lead to the strong production of immune mediators. Great. The secretion of large quantities of chemokines and cytokines, IL-1, IL-6, that's interleukin 1, 6, 8, IL-21, tissue necrosis factor, beta, and MCP-1 is promoted in infected cells in response to the COVID infection. Well, in infected cells, guess what? It's also occurring in the intercellular space, because you see there on the right, that's an infected cell. If you go to the nucleus, you'll see all these interferons, IL-1, IL-6, TNF-beta, inside that thing on the extreme right. You see where I put number 7? You know, these guys, they pump these articles out quickly. So, you know, sometimes they're not that clear. And these are all Chinese. So I don't know if they had a translator or they speak English. But, you know, they did an amazing job with this article. But some of it's a little bit choppy. So I'm going to go back and read this. The secretion of large quantities of chemokines and cytokines is promoted in infective cells. All right. On the left, that's not inside the cell. And yet on the extreme left, in the blue, you see interleukin 1, 6, 8, 21, MCP1. Those are the very cytokines and interleukins and therefore interferons that are produced outside the cell. What they're saying here, and my point, is if you look inside the cell, on the lower extreme right, where I put number 7, the nucleus of the cell is part of producing a lot of these other interferons inside the cell. So what am I getting at? The interferons are produced in the intercellular space. They're produced inside the cell. If they're produced outside the cell, they'll kill the virus. If they're produced inside the cell, they'll kill the cell. But then they'll spit out proteins to go protect the other cells from getting infected in the first place. And those cells don't die from the interferon response because the virus doesn't get into the cell. Oh, do you feel God? Do you feel God? I feel God. The genius of the immune system. These chemokines and cytokines, in turn, recruit lymphocytes. Lymphocytes are B cells. So, the cytokines from the macrophages and from the dendritic cells signal the lymphocytes. That's your humoral immunity. That's not the adaptive immunity. This is the adaptive immunity. Now we talk about the humoral immunity. Amazing stuff. You sit on that picture. I'm going to leave that picture alone now. I'm going to move out of that article. Takeaways. Number one, patrolling like rogue Navy SEALs are the macrophages. Also, the dendritic cells do something similar. I'm going to save dendritic cells for the seminar, but from the webinar, but dendritic cells are even better than the macrophages. The macrophages are like rogue Navy SEALs. They kill anything, and they do a great job of it. And when these viruses hit the macrophage kills it, throws its guts on its cell wall. That turns on the T helper cells. That turns on the T cells. The T cells divide into subsets of themselves, produce the interleukins, and the cytokines and the interferon. The interferon is the poison. That kills in the intercellular space. Because of receptor sites in the membranes of the alveolar cells, we're just going to deal with the lung for now, the virus gets inside, interferons are produced on the inside. But when interferons are produced on the inside of the cell, which is going to die, is killing the virus even though the cell is going to die. But as it dies, it produces proteins which travel to other cells to protect those cells from getting infected. And there is the genius of the immune system. Of course, what's happening to your lungs? You're dying because you're going up in the inflammatory side effect of the cytokines and the interferon, which is trying to kill the virus. And so what does your vagus nerve do? Your vagus nerve senses this because you have afferent, meaning you have fingers to these nerves. This is the autonomic nervous system now that's got fingers on all of this, and it's picking up magnetic fields. It goes up to the brain and then shoots down an impulse to do what? To shut off the cytokines so that you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. That means you have to be in your parasympathetic zone. Now, at the same time, you're doing what? At the same time, what are you doing? At the same time, your adrenals, which you have put in reserve, which you have stored up, which you have taken care of because you get your sleep, your exercise, your sun, because your insulin's not high, because you do all those right things, is flooding now the lung with cortisol, your cortisol, and your adrenaline. But in this case, your cortisol, because that's the anti-inflammatory that mitigates the downside to the cytokine response so you don't go into cytokine storm. You don't go into cytokine storm. You don't go into cytokine storm. That means, you know what you get at worst? A bad cold. Or you get very mild stuff. It never even hits the lung. Or you don't even know you've got it. Or if you go to the hospital, they hook you up, you're out in 2 days, and you're done. So what do you think Bergamo is really about? So why are we doing a quarantine then? We should have done a voluntary quarantine if you're over 70. Or a mandatory quarantine. And then we should have kept the economy going, and then we should have taken the money to take care of our old and sick. And we should have used that money, because we wouldn't have needed it for us. We wouldn't need it for unemployment. We could have used it for the population that's gonna die. Think about that. Think about it. Think about that, Dr. Fauci, and then you idiot shitbrain Ferguson. That's the guy, not Fauci. I think Fauci's doing an excellent job. Thank you, Professor Gupta. Thank you, Richard Epstein. Thank you, Professor Ioannidis. But Ferguson, sorry, my friend. Sorry. You are part of this. And you must be bought. You must be bought. You're bought or stupid. It's one of the two. You tell me, how can a guy like that, with the whole world at his ear, that has the ear of the world, make a mistake that bad? And he is making the mistake, because the death in England is about 1,200. Now, England's had this since February. It's at 1,200. If it goes up 20 times, we have 20,000 deaths. He was talking 500,000. The travesty, the tragedy. Disgusting. 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 And CNN is right there with him. Thank you, Anderson Cooper. Thank you, Don Lemon. Thank all of you low-life schmucks in the fake news. You see, you cause death when you lie. We're not mobilizing our resources now, our energies, our emotions, our finances, to make sure that those percentages of the population that are truly endangered are getting more help than they are. Okay. Vagus nerve, white lethality rates, the immune picture, worldometers. All right. Now, to me, here's the fun part. The fun part is this. The fun part is we have a problem with the coronavirus. And the problem is our humoral immunity, our adaptive immune response, that which makes the antibodies, hasn't seen this yet. So we don't have what we have for the flu. Let's forget all the vaccine shit. We don't have what you call memory B cells, B memory cells. A B memory cell means that the immune system, that the B lymphocyte, has been sensitized, meaning it's been exposed to, say, the flu virus, influenza B. It's been exposed, but you didn't get sick, because you mounted an immune response fast enough before you got sick. Now you have a memory, so that if you were, say, exposed, let's say you met this girl or boy and you fell in love and you didn't know it, but you were kissing them passionately, and they just happened to be sick with influenza B. You're going to get really sick now, or you're not. Well, you won't. If you had cells that had already been programmed to produce antibodies instantaneously to influence the bee, so that when you were kissing passionately and exchanging saliva and bringing it in a way that would get you very sick, you don't get sick because you were exposed previously and the bee memory cells are right on hand getting ready to shoot the antibodies out to save you immediately. You induce the humoral response, the adaptive response, so quickly that you're basically not going to get sick. We don't have that going for us. You're going to love this. You're going to love it. And mark my words, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. I will not be wrong about this. You don't get sick if you've been exposed. But we've never been exposed to coronavirus, COVID-19. So we don't have a good adaptive response. Our adaptive response takes too much time. We can't really mobilize the response fast enough. That's certainly the problem with the old. But it's really going to be a problem for who? The young. The young don't have acquired immunity. It's why kids are always getting sick. You know, they bring it home from school. They don't have good adaptive immunity. Adaptive immunity takes years to develop. So this is curious now. It's not curious to me, but it's curious. This is not something young people get. Little kids don't get it. You have about a 0% infectious rate. They're just not getting it. They're getting exposed to it, but they're not getting sick. Think about that. Think about that. We all put the emphasis on acquired immunity, on the antibody response. We know that we don't really have acquired immunity to the COVID-19 because it's new. And yet, who should be the most susceptible? The statistics should not be up 60 plus. They should really be from age 10 and younger. And yet, that is exactly where this threat is non-existent. You know why? Beating this is about your innate immunity. The difference between the innate immunity of a 10-year-old and the innate immunity of an 80-year-old is massive. It is massive. It's massive. Why should it be a mystery that little kids aren't getting this? Why? Why? If you just think and realize that without humoral immunity, kids should be getting it more than anybody, and yet it's non-existent. What would account for the difference? It's exactly the scenario I just explained to you. The adaptive response is not what children are using. They're using innate immunity. And because theirs is magnitudes more effective than ours, they don't even get sick. Well, what does that mean? What are the implications of that? What are the implications in a quarantine when you're indoors, you're not getting sun, you're not exercising, you're depressed, you're unemployed, you're starting to suffer because you don't have money? What are the implications of that? You're not sleeping because you're worried about how you're going to feed your family. You're not sleeping because Ferguson is calling this the next plague. What are the implications of that to your innate immunity? They're massive. Think about that. The next time somebody gets stupid in your nuclear family, think about it the next time you read something in the paper. Think about that the next time you suffer from something, from some decision made based on people who listen to mongoloids like Ferguson. pardon the word mongoloid, I shouldn't say that, I apologize. Idiots like Ferguson. The quarantine is going to depress our innate immunity. It is not presumptuous on my part to say that this has not hit the youth because their innate immunity is that much better. And by the way, off the innate immunity comes stimulation of what immunity? The humoral immunity. But the variation in the humoral immunity response is not as variable as the variation in the innate immunity response. Let me repeat that. The variation in the humoral immunity, adaptive acquired immunity response, is not as variable as the variation in the innate immunity response. Older people are going to have the essential part, the proper part of acquired immunity intact. What they don't have is the innate immunity stimulating it. And what they don't have is the bone marrow to produce the cellular warriors from the immune system. Their marrow's all fibrosed. Think about it. On any given day, if at the drop of the hat, your bone marrow could pump out umpteen trillions of immune system warriors. What do you know from listening to my show? What happens to the bone marrow over time? It fibroses. Old people don't have the marrow to pump it out. Where are those practices? Where are all the immunostimulatory practices that the old could be using? I have my clients doing hot cold therapies. I encourage my clients to go into the ocean. I have my clients with saltwater pools diving into 50 degree pools, bringing the heart rate up to 120, 130, 140, and then going into a hot shower. I have them doing that as a matter of practice. My team will not get sick. My 70 and 80 year olds will not die. I promise you this. I promise you my head is on straight. I promised you this was an exaggerated virus. And the truth is being borne out today. And that is where I'll leave you. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. You need help. I am a doctor. You're allowed to come to doctors. But more than that, sign up for the webinar. I've made it cost effective, and I will bombard you with so much more of this. Although I am evolving out of repeating the sources, I've put enough of them. If this doesn't allay your fears, I don't know what will. And it's not just me, and that's why I posted the articles. What I want to get into henceforth, and what I'm going to really focus on in the seminar, is what immunity is really about, because that's so fascinating. And this coronavirus is just a cream puff for people who unfortunately are just too sick. God bless you. I'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.